our meeting of the TCEQ Tax Relief for Pollution Control Property Advisory Committee. It's 10 o'clock, or actually 10:01, I guess. So welcome everyone here. And I think it's easier for me to just say the ones that are absent in the meeting right now is Roland Bieber, Don Lee, and Bennett Sandlin. So, and as usual, if someone arrives late, we'll announce when they're here. Want to mention that, as we always do, we welcome public comments, but our general policy, it's kind of informal. We welcome comments from the audience. However, we do want to get through our agenda and have a reasonable time limit on the speakers. And with that, I'll just open it up. Do we have any general comments before we get started from anybody on the committee? I always want to leave that opportunity, at least, for someone to speak if they want to. In our last meeting, we had an action item, which is number 2, for TCEQ staff presentation on fees collected and program costs. So we'll go ahead and take up item number 2.
Ron Hatlett for the TCEQ. The question was, the last meeting was the revenues covering the cost of the program. We looked at the last two fiscal years. In fiscal year 2010, they didn't quite cover the fees. It was about $27,000 that we spent extra in salaries than what was covered by the fees coming in. That year, we had 3 full-time staff, and the fees are really designed to pay for 2.5 full-time staff. So that half of that person should actually have been charged to another program to begin with. Last year, that's what we did. We charged 2.47 staff to the program, and we came out about $10,000 over with extra money. And all that it actually funds is the salaries and a little bit of travel and training expense for staff. This group is actually funded in a different out of a different method.
How when you say this group, you mean the staff time to staff?
Well, the staff time for this is funded through the Prop 2 money.
Oh, okay.
Your travel apparently comes out of a general air fund instead, because they didn't appropriate any money to pay for your travel.
I just drive up I-35 about 3 miles, so yeah. I don't bother. Yeah.
It's not much. It amounts to about $1,500 a year to pay travel expenses.
No, it's a Ford Explorer, but it is a hybrid. But, you know, it's a hybrid light, put it that way.
Let's check.
Yeah.
Any questions?
Very good one.
Okay.
I suspect we could probably stay there.
Yes.
Okay. We'll go ahead and jump into 3A.
I do have one more question.
Okay.
And in FISC, so that was 10 and 11.
Right.
And in 12, have you done any guesstimates of?
We looked at the number for 12, and we looked to be in about the same place we were last year. It might be about 12,000 this year. Last year we did 630 some applications. This year we did 653 so far. So 20 times $150 difference.
Okay.
And as long as we hover in that 600, 650 range, we can do 2.5 people. When we brought the third person on full time, we were actually running 1,200 to 1,300 applications a year. And when the economy turns around, of course, we'll be back up to that. But as long as the economy's down, we always see the applications drop down into the 500 to 700 range.
So it sounds like
the number of tier 2 and 3 applications would have more fees attached to them. They're about the same as what they have.
They're having it about the same each year, even with that change in the and 2 years ago when we changed the rule. You know, we knocked a lot of things off of the tier 1 table. Well, we now require them to do a tier 3 because there's a marketable product being recovered from their bag house. Whatever they're recovering, they're putting back in the system, or they're recovering reusing their water or something. So we increased the number of tier 3s doing that. But the last 2 years, they've been pretty much stable.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
That change after the rules were changed, Ron, any guesstimate about how many more tier 3s you saw?
No, I really couldn't tell you. Haven't run those numbers.
Just more.
Yeah, just more. And, you know, it's decreased the number of 1s but increased the 3s. But at the same time, it's increased the number of applications that are withdrawn, because a number of those people won't pay the extra money you know, a bag house, an upgrade to a bag house might only be $20,000. Paying a $2,500 fee isn't really justifiable if your tax, it's going to take you years to recover that from whatever tax savings there is. So if you do see our numbers, and when you see the 2011 report, you'll see the number of withdrawals steadily increasing year to year, and that's what's causing that withdrawal.
Okay. Any other questions regarding funding or from that matter?
You guys want to recommend a fee increase. We'll be happy to include that in the next rule process. You know, I'd really like a gold-plated desk.
Be careful.
The reason I wanted to bring up is I know you guys, all the state agencies are in a difficult position with the budget, and we just want to make sure you can actually, it's an important program that you can actually, you know, cover your costs is important. Otherwise, you know, those of us who advocate are more than willing to advocate, you know, for fee increases. But if there's no need, there's no need. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you. We'll go to item 3A, an overview of Tier 3.
Right. And in your handouts, there's the three pages from the guidance document that explains how the Tier 3 calculation is worked and, you know, it lays it out step by step. And then the last page of the three is actually an example that it's a real-life example. It's an application we did several years ago. But the purpose of the Tier 3 is to calculate that percentage that is truly used for pollution control. We're looking at production equipment that's providing a production benefit and a pollution control benefit. And the Tier 3 is to try and calculate that incremental cost difference, the extra money you had to spend in order to provide the pollution control at your facility. It's items like a low NOx burner, where you could have used just a standard burner, but because of the NOx regulations, you had to use a low NOx burner, and there's an incremental increase in cost related to that. Or you've done a production change to go from a solvent-based process to a water-based process, and it costs more money to do the water-based process. It doesn't provide you any additional benefit. You're still generating the same amount of widgets, generating them the same way, but it's costing you more money to do that in order to eliminate that waste solvent that you've been disposing of. And that's where the formula came from to begin with. That's what it's designed to do. The basic formula is the capital cost new minus the capital cost old minus the value of any of the productive value, the marketable product or byproduct or whatever you're recovering, divided by the capital cost. I better look to make sure. Capital cost new, and that gives you that ratio, the percentage that's pollution control. There's another factor applied, which is the production factor. So if your new production unit is producing 150,000 widgets, the old one needs to produce the 100,000 widgets, you have to reduce the capital cost new down to relate to the 100,000 widget level. And that's so you don't, it really skews the use percentage if you do it the other way. And by the same token, if you were producing 100,000, now you're only producing 50,000, it's going to skew that determination the other way if you're trying to compare those numbers. So you can increase that cost up to be equal to what 100,000 units would have been. The second part of the equation, which is the one that gives most people difficulty, is that marketable product value. And you are calculating a net present value of marketable product over the life of that piece of equipment. And what we established, a 10-year interest rate in the last rule process, we talked about a 10-year life, but that never actually got approved and into the rule. But that is the standard with most people as they use 10 years life and 10 years for the interest rate. And then it's just a simple, straightforward net present value calculation. And you subtract that value out. Are there any questions on how it's done?
Remind me, how long has this formula been in effect, Tier 3?
This formula was adopted or drafted, developed by a work group back in 1998 or 99. And then 2 years later, there was a House bill that required us to adopt a standard procedure for calculating use determinations and follow-up procedure, and we adopted it into the rule then, which would have been, pretty sure it's 2001, it became effective. And the only change since the start was when we went from being strictly byproduct as the item you separated out to being marketable product. And we did that because we realized there were a number of cases where you were producing something that really truly wasn't a byproduct. In the baghouse at a sawmill is a perfect example. If you're making particle board and using the sawdust for that, the sawdust never becomes a byproduct when you collect it. It's always intended to be a raw material for another process. And we didn't pick that up in the byproduct definition, so we changed to marketable product so we could pick those items up.
Okay. Any other questions? I think some history is good before we go much further in this. All right. Thank you, Ron. I will, as I was looking back, and those of you that have been on the committee all along, realizing in 2010 we did work on this quite a bit, on the cap, and we'll discuss 2B and then 2C, 3B and then 3C. But thought I'd read into the record again. This is from the July 30th, 2010 minutes of our committee. In 2B, it says, there was general agreement that, in three bullet points, one, uniformity does not require the use of a single formula. Two, the use of a prime rate as an interest rate is not appropriate. And three, the current cap does not always provide an appropriate use determination. So we recognized at the time the cap formula was not a remedy for all applications, all Tier 3 applications. It got put on the back burner for various reasons, and the last couple of meetings we've had, it's come up again. So that's why it's back, just for the record. So we thought it is appropriate to look at possible alternatives to the cap, or revision to the cap, or maybe it's since the environment really has changed because of carbon standards and other environmental changes, maybe we need to take another look at the parameters. And it occurred to me that maybe we should ask TCEQ what their parameters are, and just kind of step back to square one of what the expectation is for Tier 3. Could Ron or Minor or somebody help us with that? This might come across as I'm trying to reinvent the wheel. I'm not necessarily trying to do that, but I'm trying to refocus us where what we should really focus on.
What our expectation is of the committee and looking at
Tier 3? No, of the Tier 3.
The formula itself.
The formula or if you want to drop back, not even Tier 3, the whole program, if you want to drop back to that.
The program's purpose is to ensure that equipment installed at a facility, property installed, that is there for the purposes of meeting or an adopted federal, state, or local environmental regulation isn't picked up in the tax rolls and taxed. And the reason is that most of that equipment doesn't provide any productive value to the facility, and why should the facility pay twice to meet a pollution control regulation? Once when they buy the equipment, and again every year on their taxes. And that's where it came from, was the idea of, and this is equipment that in most cases probably shouldn't have been assessed a value anyway, because mm-hmm. it didn't have a productive value. And all this program does is ensure that it doesn't happen.
So that's the meeting part of it. The exceed seems to be part of the challenge.
Yeah, the exceeds has always been a challenge. It was something that came in late in that process in the bill. I think it showed up as a committee substitute on the floor of the Senate, in fact, where it suddenly said partly and exceed. And that's the real issue, is dealing with those two words. What does it mean to exceed a rule? What does it mean to have equipment that's partially for pollution control? And this formula really tries to do the partly for pollution control. It's not really the exceed. The cap is designed to determine what that partly means and how to apply that.
Okay.
So some of the parameters you look at when you look at for partly on the Tier 3, what are your drivers?
That the drivers that, when we look at a piece of equipment, and there are some that are filed as Tier 3s right up front. The applicant understands it's a Tier 3. The majority of them are actually filed as a 1 or a 2. And as we do the evaluation, we determine that it really should be a Tier 3. And the real driving there is we're looking at what benefit there is to that piece of equipment. Is it solely there for pollution control? Is that all that it does? Or does it generate, you know, some of the key words are reuse or recycle. When we see something in a baghouse or a scrubber or a stripper, you know, and a stripper looks straightforward, it's pollution control, we're stripping this waste gas and we're pulling this out. Well, that's fine until you read the word and then we're taking and we're putting it back in the process. Well, suddenly it's not just there for pollution control, it's there to recover. It recovers a raw material or it recovers finished product that is just put back in the process and processed again. And that triggers us into the Tier 3 mode. We send the notice of deficiency. They explain that you have to account for the value of that product that you're putting back, the marketable product.
I think the point of my initial question is, I know this gets philosophical to some point, but it seems, and we all agree that one formula doesn't fit all, but it seems that we're going through the mechanics of calculating it, mm-hmm. and sometimes in doing that we miss the concept of what we're trying to do. If you follow, that's and I look back to 1131 of. We can go around about what is taxable. I don't have a specific property in mind, mm-hmm. But I thought it was at least worth asking the question before we get into the 3B and the 3C. So, and we'll probably ask you to elaborate on some other things if members have more questions on that. So,
okay.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
All right, we'll get into 3B. This was on the agenda from because of prior discussion in our meetings we've had. And if any member wants to voice this better than I can, they're welcome to. But basically, the concept was it's a common sense, or I don't know if that's the right term, or if it's very clear that the marketable product value would logically never exceed the production cost. And I'm careful about using the word never sometimes. That's always a flag to me. But sometimes there are examples where the pollution control equipment was added and truly they can't imagine that there being a positive net present value at all in that equipment. So with that, I'll open it up for anybody to discuss.
I guess the question would be to Ron, how often do you see Tier 3 applications where that figure 2, equation 2, no, is it equation 2? No, where equation 3 comes out negative instead of positive. I think I'm saying that right. In other words, and then what happens in those cases? Do you then go back to the figure 1 and negative a negative, making it a positive? You know, what do you do in those cases?
A handful of times each year, 4 or 5 times each year, over the last couple of years, we've seen cases where the Tier 3 formula, the net present value has come up to be a negative number. And in that case, of course, if you apply it to the equation, you end up with more than 100%. And we're not going to give you more than 100%. We're going to limit it to the 100. But it still stays at Tier 3. Because the purpose of the additional fees on a Tier 3 is that we have to do additional review time. We have to, you know, have to verify the figures in the calculation. We have to do additional work. That's why you're paying the extra $2,350. So even if your calculation comes out to be a zero on net present value, it's still a Tier 3 application. The best recent example we've seen were 2 zero liquid discharge systems at power plants where they had discharge permits, they had been discharging the water, In the one case, they were discharging on a city land, and the city decided to use that land for something else. They suddenly they had no place to discharge the water. So they put in the equipment so that they can keep using that water over and over and over again with a little bit of makeup water. And the value on that water compared to the value of that equipment came up, I think the determination would have been 138% because they were losing so much money on that. And the other one was in that similar range, but that's the ones that we've seen.
Ron, help me a little bit. Help me a little bit just in stepping back on this. Just help me understand again. I don't have this under control. Is what we're talking about in the coming up with a negative number? We're talking about coming up and saying that. Just help me understand that.
Your costs are greater than the value of it. In the zero water discharge system, the cost to have bought that water and used it each time is lower than what it actually costs you to clean the water each time. So when you subtract, it's the marketable product is production, the value, minus the cost to produce it, you come up with a negative number there. And then when you run your net present value equation, you end up with a negative number.
So the value of what I produce,
just for the recording,
Donnelly?
Turn your mic on. Thank you.
Sorry. The value of what I'm producing is greater than the cost of what it takes to produce it.
No, the cost is greater than the value that you're going to get from it.
And when that happens, what's the result for the application?
They end up with 100%.
Even though the calculation may actually come out to 115%,
they still end up with 100, yes.
But okay. They have to go through the Tier 3 calculation, which is a lot of extra effort, is the point.
Now, that was never really an issue when we were just doing byproduct, because, I don't know, it just wasn't an issue. We've never seen a byproduct calculation where the value of the byproduct was less than the cost to produce the byproduct. It's just that we went to the marketable value and we picked up everything else, which is when we picked up the water costs or zero discharge water systems. The water's not a byproduct. They would have never done a Tier 3 application.
So when you say everything else, when you say we picked up everything else.
Product, the byproduct had a very narrow definition within the rule. It had to be a waste material that was generated by the process that through the new process, you've converted it into a material that you can reuse it or sell it. And that was very limited in what got picked up as a byproduct. It truly was something that you didn't intend to make. Oil refineries do not set out to produce sulfur. Sulfur is a byproduct of the oil refining process. So that is a true byproduct. If you had an oil refinery that was a chemical plant that intended to produce that sulfur to use the sulfur in a chemical process, then it wouldn't have been a byproduct. They wouldn't have done a Tier 3 under sulfur recovery unit. But now as a marketable product, since it is a value to them, even though they're using it in-house, they would have to pick it up as a marketable value and do a Tier 3. And that's kind of where we went with that, as we were looking at hydrotreaters, HRSGs, fly ash recovery, those types of items. They were being picked up as byproducts in some cases, but they truly are a marketable product that we want you to account for at your facility.
And the cost side of it was extended to include transportation, as I recall.
Right, and under byproduct, it was transportation and storage were the only costs we allowed you to use as a subtraction. When we went to marketable product, we expanded that out to include the production cost.
And so item 3B is to consider making a recommendation of a rule change to say that you don't have to go through Tier 3 if your marketable product value will logically never exceed the production cost. And what is logically never, how's that test run?
It's ran by engineers that, as I see it, that add the equipment, and that was never part of their economics to justify the project, or not justify the project, they had to add it.
So help me out, guys. I don't know of any other examples, but where it's clearly the revenue from it, or what little revenue you might get, would never exceed the production cost.
So the applicant would check a box saying they have determined that the marketable product value will logically never exceed the production cost, and therefore they will not go through Tier 3, and their calculations and their thoughts will not be reviewed by TCEQ on that regard, because we won't be going through the extra review. Is that the proposal? I'm trying to figure out what the proposal is here.
No, I don't. There is not a proposal here. It's for discussion right now. I don't see us voting on anything today.
Okay.
Those are my thoughts. If anybody has a viable option, I would certainly consider.
I had another question, which is, Ron or anyone on staff, do we have any cases where we've had enough Tier 3 applications of a certain type that we can bump something from Tier 1 down and say, we know sulfur recovery is always going to be about 75%, or do you really need to, is there really the necessity to look at each individual case? Because that may be another.
You mean bump it to Tier 1, right?
Yeah.
To make it a Tier 1 application, because we know that in that case.
We know, we've seen enough of these cases that we know this type of process is always going to be at about this, you know, percentage.
Okay, Ron Hallett from STAT. If you remember back to the last rules process, we had a number of items on what was then known as the equipment and categories list that were partial percentages. Those items had gone through the Tier 3 analysis more than once. We had determined that they were, a good example was the compressor engines. We had determined that running the calculation over and over with Caterpillar and various manufacturers, 20% was the number that kept coming up, and it was actually 18 to 23 or 24%. We settled on 20%, added it to the list, and after that, you filed a Tier 1 application and asked for it. In that discussion, and as part of the discussion before this committee in that, it was determined that if Tier 1 meant 100%, the only things on that list should be items that are 100%. And we removed all those partial determinations.
Who made that decision? That's right.
But that was another reason why the number of Tier 3s went up, is we took items off the list that had partial values to them. And from since then, which was February 2010, I think, when the rule came into play, if you've asked for one of those items, you've had to do a Tier 3 application to get those. In order to do what you're saying, we would need a rule change and change that first paragraph above the Tier 1 table that says if it's less than 100%, you don't qualify for a Tier 1, back to where it said it allowed partial determinations only in that amount that we had already determined that's on the list, and you could do it as a Tier 1. Now, the reason we moved that is we went, you know, we did most of those calculations back in 95 or 96, and, you know, fast forward 15 years, and do they still mean the same thing? And when we looked at the compressor engines in particular, the difference was between a lean burn engine and a non-lean burn engine. Well, with the newer NOx standards, it's not just lean burn, it's other equipment that you have to add to make them low NOx. And the 20% was no longer a valid number. And we kind of went from there to say, well, maybe the rest of these numbers aren't valid anymore either. So
I think you hit on it. My recollection was the ones less than 100%, they were taken off because no one knew how they were arrived at.
Right.
All right. So now there's the next, no justification.
You know, there's an every 3-year evaluation process on the Tier 1 table, and it's entirely possible that the next time that comes up, which will be next year, that we'll go back and look at items over the last 3 years, and maybe we were wrong. Maybe there are items that are always 20%, 25%, 50%, and you could go back and change that language and go back to putting partials back on the list and just word them. There are still some incremental cost difference items on the list where we word the determination as 100% of the incremental cost. And low NOx burners is an example of that. And that's because it's such a simple equation. It's just the new burner versus last generation's burner. What's the cost difference? and that's what you get. That's the additional cost for pollution control. And it's, you know, it's possible we could go back to looking at partials on the west.
Yeah, I mean, I would just clarify, you know, at least when we discussed it, in my view, I agree with Bob that we all agreed, at least from when I voiced agreement, that there should be removal. It was because we really didn't feel comfortable, staff didn't feel comfortable that we had a record to support the partial. I definitely view Tier 1 as allowing for partials to be listed if you guys feel like you have a record to support it. And that's kind of some of the hard work that we can do as a committee with you about going through it next time, is if there is that body that could shift. But what Bob's asking, I think, is a different question. It's a threshold question, maybe, about to avoid having to go through that, and maybe even in the meantime and in between changes to the table.
Right.
Is there a simplified calculation or representation that could be made as
some sort of an off ramp to get out of
the tier? Yeah, it's a kind of off ramp is a good term. And, you know, it's equation 3 is a pretty simple equation.
Right.
I'm just throwing this out here. Is it a, hey, we've run equation 3 and you're not gonna ever need to get into equation 1 and 2 because equation 3 is going to end up being that, and we hereby swear that, you know,
right,
our best engineering judgment that that's the case, and that isn't a $2,500 review item, maybe. But
right.
I mean, that's I think what's being teed up for just right. throwing around.
Under the current rules, the way they're written, there really isn't an anticipation that you would ever do that calculation without supplying the calculation to us, and that is a Tier 3 application because we'd have to review it. I don't know that we would become really comfortable with the idea that the applicant reviewed it, said, oh, we ran the numbers, it's never going to be more than zero, so it's a Tier 1, but we're not sharing that information with you because, you know, it's a Tier 1, we don't have to. From a staff standpoint, that would concern me. I don't speak for the agency right now. I'm just speaking as
sure,
a staff
sure,
member.
Yeah.
That would concern me, especially if somebody filed one and said that, and then the next guy who filed a similar application said, well, we ran the numbers, and it's actually 20% that we get out of it. And then it's, you know, you can say as your company it's never going to be something, but the guy next to you doing the exact same thing, maybe he's got a market for that, and it's got value to him. So, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of that deal. It's not a 100%, and it's not on the list. It's not 100%, and it's not a Tier 2
right.
every time.
Right.
Then that makes it a Tier 3, and that's under current policy and current rules.
Sure.
We want to see the Tier 3 because of that. We want to do that calculation so when we supply it to the appraisal district, we're confident that, oh, yeah, they ran the numbers, and it really truly is 100%.
Yeah.
There is no value to that marketable product, and that's why we've issued it as a 100% determination.
Yeah, I mean,
I was wondering, I know this is probably out of the process a little bit, but I was wondering if someone could file a Tier 2 application and include in there that they did that Formula 3, and that's their justification for a Tier 2.
I need Tim to answer that. That's more of a legal.
So it's more than $250 worth of review, but it's not more than $1,000. I mean, trying to be pragmatic to not overloading you with more work than you can
right.
pay for.
Right.
I mean, I just think the idea is if it's just going to be, I mean, first of all, I don't think our chairman was implying, and I certainly am not implying, that you would not review the equation. I would think that would be essential, that you would you would need to be comfortable. Just don't take our word for it. It's just that review would be so simple. In many of these instances, that Tier 2 idea is very interesting because these are 100% ideas. I mean, the whole concept is, hey, you're never going to get there. It's 100%. But it doesn't meet the Tier 1 on-ramp criteria of not having a marketable product, right?
Tim Reedy, TCEQ, Environmental Law Division. I think the current process, just to speak to what Mike just brought up, allows for 100%. You know, and again, this also goes back to why we made the change in the first place, in order to develop the record. And for those pieces of equipment that Ron says we get, you know, maybe 3 applications or 4 applications for certain pieces of equipment during the course of the year that do, after we run the calculation, we believe, hey, this piece of equipment is used in a uniform way. When you get it, you're always going to get 100% or over 100%. I think when we discussed the change in the rules, we said, hey, one thing we need to do is to build up what we have in our records supporting these 100% use determinations. And so for those items of equipment, I believe during the next rule proposal, you know, we're required to open up the Tier 1 list every 3 years. Those would be the types of equipment where it would be, you know, recommended that, hey, we've received a threshold number of these applications. Every time we've seen them used in these production processes, they've been over 100%. We think we no longer need to see partial calculations for these types of equipment, and they would be eligible for inclusion on the Tier 1 list.
I get the impression, by the way, from the phone calls that I've received on this, that it's the people are or may not be in that handful that apply for it every year. They simply give up. There's maybe smaller companies or whatever, and they say it's a simple process, as Mike said, but I don't want to go pay the fee and go through the Tier 3 process. So that's just, if you think of it as only a handful, is only the concern, maybe it's not worth a lot more discussion, but I think there is a lot more people out there, a lot more applicants, potential applicants.
$750 is keeping someone from applying for a significant tax break?
Well, we just heard from Ron that $2,500 would. I mean, for a small piece of equipment, I mean, at least that. I mean, you're not trying to speculate what everybody's intent is, but just hypothetically.
We're not talking about small pieces of equipment here, are we?
Could be, oh yeah.
Well, that's not the real issue. It's not around $10,000 pieces of equipment.
I mean, I will submit that I think there's a much bigger picture issue to be talked about how we're handling marketable products differently. But if you were actually going to try to solve the problem within the current framework and the rule, you know, the comment about Tier 2 is a very interesting one, you know, because right now the Tier 1 table preamble, or whatever you want to call that first paragraph, says if there's a marketable product, file a Tier 3. Well, why wouldn't it say file a 2 or 3? As appropriate, and you know, after consultation with staff, and you know, I'm more interested in having the big conversation. Mm-hmm. But right. If we were wanting to solve it in the meantime, while we debated the big conversation, you know, maybe that's the solution: is to open up the opportunity that somebody could file a Tier 2 application with just Equation 3.
Yeah, and again, Tim Reedy, TCQ Environmental Law Division. I would want to defer to staff because really, the fee structure is involved in it's the complexity of the application and the amount of review time spent. So if it's just, well, now we're going to take Tier 2s and take all that additional review time that we're using on the Tier 3 calculation and tack it onto the Tier 2 application process and just not compensate you for the additional time worked on the Tier 2, I think staff would probably have a problem with that.
So, I mean, because some of us are new and some of us forget things, that's me. What is the $1,000 supposed to cover for a Tier 2? Like, what's the additional review? Is it the fact that it's not just on a list and you check a box? What's that $750 for, Ron?
The difference between Tier 1 and Tier 2 is normally the Tier 2 is something else to do.
Oh, sorry, Ron Hatt with staff. The difference between a Tier 1 and a Tier 2 has traditionally been a Tier 2 is something we haven't seen before. And the additional review time is learning what that equipment is, how it works, whether it really is something a rule requires you to do. And that's the additional funding.
Spending that additional time.
Admittedly, a traditional Tier 1 application can be done pretty quickly. But most of the Tier 2s involves quite a bit of additional work in looking at things. The additional $1,500 to get up to the 3 is doing that calculation, verifying the calculation, checking the numbers in there, seeing if what they've used as a natural gas price is a regional natural gas price for the last 3 years. It's going to be reasonable in the future, those types of items. Mm-hmm.
But the Tier 2, I mean, it was my understanding from years ago that the Tier 2 was basically a 100% piece of equipment that just wasn't on the list.
Right.
And that it had no marketable product. at that, or byproduct at that time. It didn't produce a byproduct. Basically, it was a piece of equipment.
Right. And there was a time, and this is prior to this last rule change, and what we did with byproducts being on marketable products and, you know, partial percentages not being on the list, where we looked at, particular when you changed from a gas-fired compressor engine to an electric, we allowed you to do that at 100%, and it was 100% of the additional cost to go with the electric engine. Which was, I mean, it's a partial, but it's a 100%, so it's a Tier 2 rather than a Tier 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think if you were looking just for a pragmatic, so this really comes into play for things that might actually make the list once the list is revised, probably. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, do we want to create a process that helps people? You know, and I would, you know, I'm not going to advocate for it, but I think the sense of it would be, listen, if it actually is something that's on Tier 1 and you have seen a bunch, you're not going to spend your time figuring out what it is. You're going to spend that same amount of time or less just running the third equation.
Right. And those are those few big applications, I think, that we're talking here. There are a lot of small applications. There's a lot of dust collectors, scrubbers, strippers that do generate a marketable product. And that's what I was saying before, we get a lot of, the last 2 years we've seen a lot of withdrawn applications because, as Bob said, they look at that and there's just not enough value there to justify hiring somebody to do the equation, filling out a Tier 3 application and paying $2,500. They're not going to recover the fees.
Yeah. I'm just wondering how much, I just like to figure out how much the $2,500 plays into that, whether it's really not the time that it takes for...
To do the calculation.
I mean, you have to remember, too.
All the other time that it takes to mess with it. Yeah.
But when they do this application, it's the cost, but it's not what it's being valued at. So they may spend $10,000 and say, okay, I'm going to spend $10,000, but on the tax roll, it's a replacement or it's a partial, so I'm only going to get a value on it of $1,000, and you spend $2,500 on a fee to do it. And they say, well,
yeah,
it's the long term versus the short term.
Well, it sure sounds like that possibility of creating a another type of off-ramp or another type of, I guess I should say it's different, another type of Tier 1 list where, I mean, if there are a bunch of scrubbers out there, right,
mm-hmm.
That produce a byproduct and that becomes a pretty standard type deal, then it seems to make sense to set up a Tier 1 type process with a lower fee because, hey, this fits within known parameters.
And it's going to be a standard deal, but the value is going to be across the board depending on what you're recovering from your scrubber. So we couldn't put it on the list at 100%. It would still have to be a partial determination.
That means it still takes calculations you've got to...
Right, we'd still be doing a Tier 3 calculation.
Well, let me ask: Are you talking about the same scrubber producing the same type of byproduct, or different byproducts?
What's the variation? Yeah, it depends on the company and what they're recovering and how much they're recovering. We've seen scrubbers at some facilities that are, I mean, everything they're bringing out of it is product and it's going back. We've seen others that it's a product, but it's, you know. 15% of its product, so it's going back in rather than being disposed of.
Wouldn't you classify it by the byproduct coming out? So wouldn't it be, like, if we had a Tier 1A list for these type of things, wouldn't it be XYZ type of scrubber that produces ABC byproduct? And so if it's that, then you know what it is? Or am I oversimplifying it?
So I think you're oversimplifying. I think you would end up with 20 or 30 scrubber items listed, and almost every year we would discover a new one that was different.
So it wouldn't wind up being...
Yeah, really couldn't. I mean, you could put it on the Tier 1 table and say, you must supply the Tier 3 calculation and the percentages based on calculation.
I'm just trying to get to your statement about the values being over the place, because I heard something you said earlier about, well, one guy may have a market for it, another guy doesn't. And so I'm wondering, do we have a process that says, no, wait, sulfur in Texas, if you're producing this byproduct A, this is the market value for it wherever you are, and not this. It almost sounds like you've got applicants who say, I've got no market value to this. Well, I do. No one over here says I do. And that seems to erode away our priority of uniform and equality.
Well, the calculation, that variable in the calculation is something the applicant provides us, is what the value of that material is to them.
And so if you have an applicant that says X amount of material is worth $1 million, and you have another one who says X amount of material, same amount, is worth $10,000, y'all don't resolve that?
We really don't have a way to verify that, especially when they're transferring it within the company. We don't. I mean, they're telling us what they internally value that at. There's no way for us to really determine if that's accurate or not. We have to assume that they're providing us valid information.
That seems like a big problem to me. I'm just.
Well, but all the cost numbers are the numbers they provided us. I mean,
I'm assuming you're seeing lots of them, and when you see outliers, you can pull them in, and you can, you know, well, come back and say, "Wait a second, you got to justify this outlier number." Everyone else says the cost for this is X, and you're saying it's X times 10.
But it's going to vary by part of the state. A couple of years back, we looked at a facility that was producing a material that, if you're along the Gulf Coast, is either a sellable product to somebody there or you put it on a barge and ship it to Louisiana. This company built in West Texas, and they went to determine the market value. It cost more to transport it than they were going to get for it. Theirs all goes in a landfill. It's the exact same material.
So in all these cases, it sounds to me like you're saying there's a lot of different variables that have to be looked at and justified. In other words, if someone saw the application that went for the West Texas place and saw that it was worthless, and they come back and they're building on the coast and they say it's worthless. I mean, look, it's worthless in that one, it's worthless here. You'd have to call that to question, right?
Yes.
And so in all these situations, there's a lot of, but I think I'm picking up from you, there's just a lot of variability here that y'all have to look at and take into account. So it's just the nature of the beast, it sounds to me, that you'll have to do a lot of work on these things.
Right.
I think that's a perfect example of why the one-size-fits-all cap equation doesn't work.
Turn on your mic, please.
It is on.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, I couldn't.
Sorry, this is Robert Castor. I was going to say, I think that's a good example of why the one-size-fits-all cap equation doesn't really work.
Right.
And I think we talked about that in a meeting. What, you have the meeting minutes, Bob, from when was it, in 2010, where we...
Yeah, July 30th, 2010.
Yeah, where we had decided as a committee that, you know, there are opportunities. I mean, I'm looking at this example that you've given, and I mean, I can change these numbers and say, well, what happens if I put in a bag house and company XYZ has found some on-site use for their dust? Maybe they're doing some backfill on something, and I don't have that same on-site use, so my net present value is zero, and maybe theirs is too, because they've found that, you know, it costs them more in energy to run this bag house than the value they get out of the dust. They've just found some on-site reuse for it.
Right.
So I can change these equations these numbers in the equation and zero out net present value. And I would think logically, if I'm told to put in a bag house and I don't have any reuse purpose for that dust, and I run this equation and I don't get 100%. And I would think that would be 100% pollution.
So if you have... If you put in the bag house and you tell us right up front that you're disposing of the material, it stays on a Tier 1 list. If you put in the bag house and you tell us that you're recycling the material into your process or you're selling it, then it becomes the Tier 3 and you have to account for it.
Okay, fair enough. But what if I'm reusing the material on site and it has no net present value? It's still costing me way more to have this...
Right.
You know,
well, and that's the discussion that we're having is what happens when it comes up with a negative value. Do you still spend the $2,500 for Tier 3, or is there an off-ramp or a way to get around that?
I think the point I'm making is right. I you know, what is the percentage? Because if that were the case, my Tier 3 equation doesn't give me 100%, but you could argue that, you know, there's no economic benefit to me at all by doing this. I just happen to, you know, say, well, instead of throwing it away, I'm going to, you know, fill in this hole.
Right.
But I don't get 100% when my neighbor who doesn't have a hole to fill in would get 100% on the same exact
thing. Well, yeah, the ready mix plant that uses that recycled concrete to pave the facility. as opposed to the ready-mix plant that pours it in a dumpster and it goes to the landfill.
I mean, I get confused when we sit there and we say the Tier 3 is supposed to take into account the differential between pollution and production. And if you put in a baghouse and the driver wasn't because it was part of a production piece of equipment, even though it produces a byproduct and you're doing something with that byproduct because you have it's part of the requirement,
right?
Then, you know, just like you said, if you had management that said, I'm not going to do anything with it, and it's next to the guy who's doing something with it, and the pieces of equipment are exactly the same and doing exactly the same thing, what's the difference in the equipment? The answer is nothing. Right?
Yes.
You're both required to put in the piece of equipment. It's something that was done, and yet you're coming up with two different answers. And let's say they both apply for it. You get two different answers. The equipment's doing exactly the same thing, same purpose, same widget, whatever. It's producing the byproduct. One guy says, I'm not going to do something with it. I'm going to throw it over here. And the other guy says, well, I can sell it down the road, recover some of my cost out of it, and it's not completely, what you said, a loss.
But
then you get a different answer on the Tier 3.
Yes. Under the rules, that's what happens. If you're disposing of that material you're recovering, it's 100%. If you're recycling or reusing it or selling it, it becomes a partial determination offset by that value. And if it has no value, then it becomes 100%, but you've still gone through that Tier 3 process.
Yeah, but what my said was management.
It was a management decision. We've got an application for a tile company that the material that was coming out of the baghouse they had been throwing away, and they did a chemical analysis and realized that there was no reason why they couldn't put that back in the process, in the middle of the process, and turn it into tile. So they're no longer paying to dispose of it. But they had to file a Tier 3 because it had value. It offset the amount of raw materials that they put in their process to generate the same amount of tile.
And, you know, I think the fundamental, maybe unpopular question is, how did that change the fact that that was still pollution control equipment?
It's not anymore, by my estimation. Not solely and totally. It also has economic viability.
Is it used to produce goods and services? Is that its use?
Well, that's what our Tier 3, as I'm understanding it, is determining.
If it's producing income, it's producing something, so it's not entirely pollution control.
That's not really what the statute says, but I hear you. I mean, we're going to agree to disagree about what used to produce goods and services is versus what used to control, prevent, or reduce pollution is. I mean, that's the fundamental, wonderful place that staff is in the middle of.
It is, and it truly is. If the impetus for the equipment was environmental law, the impetus for installing the equipment was environmental law. I don't think that in and of itself, if it generates a serviceable product, an economically viable product, means that it gets 100% write-off at Tier 1. If there's something coming out of that environmental pollution control equipment, the pollution control equipment that has some economic viability, then, you know, we're appraising plants and properties and everything everywhere over net present value of capital streams and profit spreads and so forth and so on. If they do the Tier 3 for this $10,000 piece of equipment, which would have $300 taxable value probably, but we do a Tier 3 for a $10,000 piece of equipment, and I'm, pick on my neighbors, I'm ExxonMobil, and I've got 2,500 of these $10,000 pieces of equipment. Do I have to file a Tier 3 for every one of them? You know, because at that point in time, that becomes, you know, the economics of scale.
But what bothers me about this equation is that depending on your timing when you file it can give you a greatly different answer than what that equipment does. In other words, you file it and say it produces an answer of 100% or produces an answer of 10%. Economics go bad the next year, you file it again and get 100%.
Well, I guess maybe
what's changed in the equipment?
Nothing's changed in the equipment. But what we're talking about now is micro and macroeconomics that none of us have any control over. We make managerial decisions on a daily basis with regard to cost of inputs and throughputs that change what we're doing. If the product is no longer, if I apply for the year that I get 115%, I have a negative return on the byproduct of the equipment, and I get 100% write-off on Tier 3. Next year, something changes in the price of hydrocarbons, and I'm making a profit off of it. Am I going to go back and reapply? That's just the vacillations of capitalism.
One of the points I was trying to make, though, with this, though, is I think if you have a zero net present value, you don't get 100% on this equation. I mean, I'm using your example here.
Well,
if they're throwing away the dust.
If it's a new piece of equipment and there's no capital cost old, then you're going to get 100%.
But I mean,
there's nothing subtracted from
it. But what about
it.
In this example right here? I mean, you know, company X is throwing away their dust because they don't have an on-site use for it. But you would argue that, well, that's a marketable product because company Y is reusing it for something. So by definition, you know, if they can reuse it, then why can't you? But, you know, the company that's throwing away then gets punished because, you know, they zero out their net present value, do the exact same calculation, but they don't get 100%. They get 42%, whereas the company who is reusing it on site gets 40%. Mm-hmm. So there's a problem. There's an inherent issue with the equation when you have something like a net present value of zero or negative in situations like that.
And we recognize
a replacement equipment.
I don't know if we can ever get to a perfect equation, but we're logical things like just what he just said, I'm hoping we get a little closer. So, but again, I've asked for ideas, and we don't have any new ideas right now. We're just kind of elevating the issue and the concern right now. And also, and I'll comment on next year being a rules revision year. This is not too early to start because it takes a long time, as we know, to go through the rules process.
I thought we just finished one.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what's the program been around 18 years now? Nobody's ever fundamentally relooked at the program since it was started. So if that's a direction you'd like to go, I mean, we look at applications as being a Tier 1. If they're not a Tier 1, they're a Tier 2. If they're not a Tier 2, they're a Tier 3. Maybe we should look at all applications as being a Tier 3 and improving them otherwise.
Yeah, and I'd turn that around. I mean, I think that, you know, we do live in a whole new world. And, you know, from the perspective of electric generation, you know, you can't build a fossil-fired power plant in the United States of America right now that doesn't affect an output-based emission standard that inherently is going to careen this program into a discussion of whether energy efficiency is the only means of pollution control, mm-hmm. commercially viable means. And so, you know, we're going to have a whole nother set of problems. You know, it'll be oil refineries next, et cetera, et cetera. And whether or not we like that
Everything.
Is a different question. But
we've been saying since this constitutional amendment was first proposed. We live in a society where everything is going to be getting more efficient, more cleaner, everything. And so that this program has the threat of becoming a general business tax exemption and shifting the property tax burden to residential only.
And my counter to that would be that we're creating an economic a market in terms of where products are made and electricity is generated that is not viable economically for business because we're imposing absurd externalities on those programs. Okay, this is
what
you think a power plant wants to generate low carbon fuel or a refinery wants to generate perfect fuel. Those companies exist to serve their shareholders or their citizens if they're municipally owned, and they're not necessarily in the business of making clean or green. They're in the business of surviving, and if society, whether or not everybody agrees with it, but this administration imposes something on these programs. I mean, I think it's wrong-headed to suggest that we're somehow extracting something from the tax base. We're making it almost impossible to build and create jobs. And so we have to figure out a way to minimize that impact. The whole purpose of this program was to make sure that when we're going to impose that externality on a business, okay, we're not going to keep hitting them every year to carry a tax burden along with it.
Agreed. So it's a difficult balancing.
Yeah.
It's a difficult balancing act because, as Ron so well said earlier, the whole justification that we all agreed to, the local government agreed to, is that if business is having to invest in property to comply with environmental rules, we should not add that to their tax burden. But at the same point, we have to avoid a situation where I benefit tax-wise if I have environmental regs on me that someone who doesn't have them on them does. We can't be in a situation where we're producing things, but because we do so in a green way, my production is now tax exempt.
And so that's mine was very simple in the fact that I was looking at an exemption not based on value. That's for the appraisal district to do. I was looking at an exemption based on use. And when you do a net present value calculation, you're basing an exemption off value. Mm-hmm. That can change from year to year. That's not use. That's value. So you're basing an exemption that has a value clause in it. And it should be on a use clause, not value. And that's why I was just saying that it needs to get back to the use of the property, not who's using it, and not in what year it's being valued under that premise. That's all.
Well, I think you're pointing to some fundamental challenges that we have in even how the exemption is structured. You know, because when you're looking at it like that, and then we give a permanent exemption from going forward that's not reviewed again based upon market conditions that are occurring in a one point in time that are highly volatile, that's a fundamental flaw to this whole program.
But the Tier 3 is the only part. The Tier 2 doesn't do that, and the Tier 1 doesn't do that. The Tier 3 builds value into your exemption, not the use of the property, the value. And that needs to be done at the appraisal district side.
Do we have any examples of Tier 3 applications that aren't about byproduct but are about someone's applying to build a new coal plant, and they say, even though it's not presently required, I'm going to build it as IGCC, even though I could build it as a critical or supercritical, you know, boiler, I'm going to go the extra step and make it cleaner, but because it's going to cost me $1 billion more than it would have otherwise, but I'm going to – have we ever had applications like that that aren't – there are Tier 3, because they're partial, you're not going to make the whole plant.
And they're exceeding, not just me.
But they're exceeding what they need to do. Do we have?
We have a greenhouse gas application in-house for $240 million that has to do with sequestration of CO2.
Huh.
That involves the construction of a power plant in order to do that. That we're wrestling with right now as to whether there is a rule that requires you to do that.
Uh-huh.
As long as and along with the side that the CO2 becomes a product because
that,
it's sequestered in a gas or an oil field is, you know, for additional energy recovery, and you know, it's not your gas to begin with. You're buying it, you're getting it from the guy next door that you're producing hydrogen from, and there's a lot of issues with that.
It's complicated.
Very complicated.
But then again, it takes a lot of power to sequester it. That's
well, yeah, that's in this case, what I was looking at was a 400-megawatt power plant, and in order to sequester half the carbon from that plant, they had to supply an additional 150 megawatts of power.
To Greg, help me, Greg. We're talking about valuation. We're talking about that being an appraisal district issue. And if I'm, you know, and I'm simple-minded and new to the game, but if we are looking at this and we say to, if I'm going to take your, as I understand your point, to an absurd extreme, I think it eliminates Tier 3. If the machine, whatever this piece of equipment is, has the possibility of generating some economic benefit for which there needs to be a net present value calculation done, and that's the purview of the appraisal districts, you're drawing that then Tier 3 goes away. And we make that argument at every appraisal district in the state, and instead of coming here.
Well, they're trying to do an exemption based on the use of the equipment, or they should, I think.
I understand, sir.
So, you know, to me, first of all, define what this multi-purpose production, that's the first step to me. I mean, you got to define what it is. Is it something that has production and an environmental benefit? And then quantify based on that use. But if it's doing the same thing from plant to plant to plant, why are you getting a different answer based on the business value of what they do? But it's a value side, and that's for if it's you're going to value that, your cost to market value relationship to me is going to be something on an individual basis. Just like you said, you got plants out there. Some are more profitable, some are not, and your market value is going to fluctuate if you're doing all three approaches to value.
Sure you are.
To come up with that. So that exemption on the taxable side is either going to be greater or less depending on its contribution to the plant, right?
I understand that.
So, I mean, it'll take care of itself on the market value side, but what I'm saying is if the muffler is doing the same thing, it is what it is, and it shouldn't depend on ownership. It should be the use of that equipment. And I'm not saying that. I'm saying it needs to be defined. If it's going to have a Tier 3, you shouldn't have those kind of arguments that Don was saying where I could come back next year and get a different answer. The answer should always be the same as long as the use of the equipment is the same. Not that I can, you know, well, I'll wait till the economics go bad. I'll refile. I'll get 100%. And I'm saying as long as the use of the equipment stays the same. Now, if you change the use of that equipment, that's a different story. But if the use of the equipment is the same and it's what it was designed for, then it should produce roughly the same answer.
Irrespective of whether or not there is some value, some product coming out that can be used that adds value to the overall process.
I mean, the question is no, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that if it's in this baghouse case or whatever, and you didn't have it before, and now you have to put it in, and you put it in, and it's producing a byproduct that you didn't want to begin with, and you wouldn't have done it. Now you've got something, you say, well, I've got this, what do I do with it?
Mm-hmm.
I spent the money because I had to.
But if you're going to get money from the byproduct, the whole thing of the program is to not tax you, to help you pay for the what you had to put in. But if you're making money, why should you get it twice, once for the product you sell and again for the tax exemption?
Well, making money is a stretch as it relates to most byproduct production.
I agree, and that's why you get a partial. You don't get 100%.
And I'm here. I mean, I'm going to stand right where I think I said it in one of the first meetings we met with. Recycling, avoiding disposal in the ground is environmental protection. We spend billions every year to protect groundwater. So keeping sawdust from a landfill, keeping coal ash from a landfill, keeping any of that act itself is pollution control. Keeping it out of the air was the first pollution control. Recycling it is the second. And I know great rules can be abused. We got to make sure we don't have abuse of that concept. But I think if we, when we look at this program anew in this brand new world and a new rulemaking, I think we need to take a little bit more ownership in that diversion from landfilling is a pollution control action. It doesn't. You can't change the use of a product. I mean, of a piece of equipment because you think they're going to make a little money, when in fact the action that they took was also pollution control. And that's not going to solve all of our problems. We're going to still have issues that don't fit into that criteria. But when we're talking about taking a solid that you captured at a baghouse and figuring out, or some other control technology and keeping it out of a landfill, that act itself is pollution control. Two different steps. One to keep it out of the air, one to keep it out of the ground. And I think that would help us whittle out some of the more, you know, I think absurd examples of the program getting bogged down. We're still going to have some examples that will fit your situation where somebody, you know, wouldn't necessarily have been landfilling the material. You know, but I mean, I think that's something we have to remember is that ultimately when the statute and the constitutional amendment were passed, it was if we're going to say that they can't do what a citizen of the United States could do if they just sat there and wanted to do it because of the greater good, then we're not going to tax them for it, okay? If I capture stuff in my bag house as an American, I can lay it on the ground on my property if I own it, okay? The only reason I can't do it without a permit and a double liner and a leachate collection system is because society has said we're going to protect groundwater. So that recycling action is pollution control. And that's, again, I don't want to overstate it because that rule could probably be abused, but I think the threshold question is what is the use of the property, and if there's an action that increases or creates income, was that action pollution control? Because, you know, I think it fundamentally, this program cannot be about, if somebody figures out a way to do it better and more efficiently and less costly than somebody else, they shouldn't be punished for it. We're creating disincentives for innovation when we do that.
I take no exception to the latter. For me, the fundamental question when we're talking about this, and I just, is we're still talking about benefit at site, correct? Now, because I agree with the tertiary nature of not filling the landfill, you know, and if we can find innovative things to do with recycling. I haven't been reared on the farm. We were the king of recyclers. I mean, that's just how that works. You know, we had 20,000 pullets. We changed the houses every 20 weeks, and you know where that manure and that litter went. It went on the pasture. My uncle had 350 sows and 6,000 hogs on feed and was shut down because of groundwater. So the fact that you use it on the site, you know, the fact that we were repumping the waste off the hogs and fertilizing the pasture, not putting nitrates down, not putting some chemical product down, you know. Now, there was a whole other set of issues that came along with that. But what is, if we're talking about, I don't disagree with you at all economically, Michael. I just want to make sure that this thing is debated from both sides, okay? I mean, I do. And I'm here because of the hydrotreaters, because of the notion of off-site benefit and marketable sulfur. Okay, so that's kind of the raw edge where I am with the effect that it happens. But even the most efficient dinosaurs extinct, and efficiency in and of itself is not enough. You know, we can't continue to be dinosaurs, and I'm not suggesting that we should. But I don't disagree with anything that you're saying about the second act and the tertiary acts of environmental control. But if there is something other than on-site benefit to that pollution control, because the children of the school district in which I reside are living on the smokestacks, then I'm going to be pretty hard about exemptions on those things. Not that I have any sway, okay? But, you know, we live there with it, and those children live there with it. And we are in one of the identified disease clusters in the United States, right there on the Houston Ship Channel. So I want to make sure we're focused on site. And if something is, the impetus for something is the right reason, and there is some economic benefit that comes from it, and that economic benefit supersedes the value of the equipment, then at some juncture, that's got to be considered for taxation by my estimation. And I'm not trying to move everything in the world we've got overseas. You know, I'm telling you, I'm as blue collar, got guys at the plants, and I appreciate jobs and careers, and they're not necessarily the same thing. But if it turns a profit, irrespective of its impetus, and I said profit, if it turns a profit, irrespective of its impetus, I don't care if it's tertiary heat recovery on a power plant. At some juncture, at the point in time that the economic switch, for whatever reason, then there's got to be these tier three calculations by my estimation. And I'm one voice. Now, do I think that has to be done for every $10,000 piece of equipment that's replicated 2,500 times up and down the ship channel or in West Texas or wherever it is? No. But initially, I think yes. Thank you all for hearing me.
Mike's issue on recycling, the problem we run into with recycling is why it's really nice that you do it. There aren't any regulations that require you to do it. You're doing it voluntarily.
It's an exceed.
What about?
Well, but you can't exceed a regulation unless you're first required to meet it, and if there's no regulation, you're not exceeding anything.
Well, but, I mean, the fact is that I can't drop something that would otherwise be under a regulatory net on my property without a permit.
Right.
So if I divert it, that's pollution control. It's to avoid groundwater contamination. There's a regulatory framework around it. I mean, that's – I hear what you're saying. I know, understand the rationale y'all have articulated. You're in a very difficult position because that same theory could be abused. But, you know, if somebody is actually under a regulatory requirement, the second that they get it in their possession to handle it in a way that complies with, let's call it RCRA generally, okay, then they're acting in a regulatory framework. That is the rule. Now, the fact that the rule doesn't say thou shalt recycle rather than get a permit, you know, that the regulatory performance standard of RCRA is protection of groundwater. Okay, and if I take something and don't put it on the ground and make a use for it, I've protected groundwater just as much as if I dumped it in a double line leachate collected, you know, landfill. That, you know, again, within proper frameworks, we got to prevent abuse. But, you know, I think that's one thing when we take a new look at everything, we need to be thinking: is there something in the equation that really needs to minimize the impact on true pollution control second tier steps? And I don't necessarily, you know, disagree with the concept that there should be some check against somebody actually turning a profit, because at some point, you know, who knows, their business might change. But as long as they're not in that business, you know, that should be okay. But, you know, I don't fault the staff for trying to work with that difficulty of, you know, what is the regulatory requirement that's being met or exceeded.
Right.
I mean, that's something, that's why we're having this conversation, because it's not an easy answer. And we'll keep talking about it.
I mean, thanks. I would want to add, you know, Lloyd, I agree with you, and I thought your point was good. But, you know, I think just to go back to, like, part B on the agenda, and it's when things don't turn a profit and they don't have a net present value, and what do you do in that situation? And I mean, I could give you 100 examples of where doing a tier three on something that doesn't have a net present value doesn't get you 100% like it might should on certain examples. So I mean, you know, if we're going to throw out concepts or ideas, and I forget who it was, but someone mentioned, well, you know, why don't we just have everything go to a tier three? Well, you know, I could see where you might have a tier one list and then you have a tier two, which is everything else, but you give general guidance on how to do that analysis and based on use and that kind of thing. But, you know, I think having a defined cost analysis procedure here doesn't work for all cases. And I think the question is, well, what do we do when it should be 100%, but someone argues that it has a marketable product? Well, I'm not getting any value out of that at all. I'm not getting any profit. There's no production benefit. What do we do with that? And does I think someone's argued that, well, it doesn't go in tier two because, you know, that's kind of a different set of scenarios. So where does it go? Because if it doesn't go in tier two, but tier three is not giving in 100% like it should, I mean, what do we do with it? I mean, it's almost like, you know, we did away with tier four, but really there was some benefit to that and being able to propose an alternative means of determining a use percentage for something.
Well, part of the reason for dealing with the tier four is the rule or the statute does say we're supposed to adopt a method. And I think our legal staff was kind of concerned that adopting a method that said you could propose a method wasn't really adopting a method for making determination.
Maybe by adopting a method, you adopt a generalized method and not so much a specific equation that...
Or multiple equations.
Yeah.
Right.
The statute said specific standards, sufficient and specific enough to ensure uniform results. We could have it. I don't want to dance on the head of that pin, but I think the question of... You know, it goes really back to the very good question the chairman asked to begin with. What are the basic, I'll use my phrase, not his, what are the performance standards you all see as the program that you need to check off? And you need a good job of articulating those. And to the to the end of should we take a whole new look at the program, you know, can we figure out a way to efficiently, you know, comply with that statutory directive, okay, that we have specific enough standards to provide, you know, fair results, I guess is my interpretation of that, without getting caught in they want us to develop one or maybe two equations, okay? I'm not saying that's what you're suggesting. I just think that there's room in that statute to get to what the statute's after, which is avoiding inequitable results. And you know, not an easy job, but perhaps one of the jobs we're asked to address here.
I've heard Robert say a couple times that he has all these examples that don't work. I'd like to see some of those run the numbers myself. If you could provide your examples, I'd certainly like to.
In this one right here, and the one that was handed out to us, all I did was change the marketable product value from $307,000 to zero. There's no profit being made off of the installation.
But wasn't there no didn't Ron have an answer to that? That there was no replacement cost old, so it automatically.
Well, what if
if there's not a replacement cost, then the equation becomes capital cost new minus zero divided by capital cost new, and you have 100%.
But maybe there is a replacement cost. Maybe I've installed.
And you're right. And this is an issue we discussed in the last rule process, at least internally. I think it even came up in a work group meeting, is there's an inequity there if I'm replacing a bag house and spending $100,000. And I have to subtract the $50,000 value, the old bag house, I get 50%. But the guy next door just built a new factory, and he constructed $100,000 bag house. He got it all. How is that fair?
Yeah, I agree.
And I think that was what led to the discussion before, that the cap just simply doesn't always work. That there
I would think a replacement might be a different.
So just as a...
Yeah, that might be something we need to look at if it's a replacement.
Right. Well, if you're doing it as a Tier 1 net bag house, we're not even asking if it's a replacement.
Well, sure.
I've thought about your example before, too. And if you're replacing it, it seems like you're junking the old equipment, and it's no longer on the appraisal roll or whatever anyway. So the new equipment, I never have gotten why there's a reduction there.
Well, I think you go back to the fact that the program started in 1994 with a date in it that says this equipment can't be on the tax rolls before January 1st, 1994. And in 1999, if you were replacing a bag house, it was probably a bag house that was on the tax rolls.
Okay,
do you
I
take that $50,000 bag house off and put $100,000 on and then take the $100,000 off, or do you just add the additional $50,000? You're 18 years down the road, do we see that happening as much? I think I saw a boiler last year that was 40 years old on an application, but no, I mean, you're replacing Lonax burners that have probably been replaced twice already in the last 18 years, or reconstructing a bag house that was built in 95, 96. So, I mean, it is an issue. I mean, it's something that we recognize as an issue. It's when we got the directive from the commissioners back in 99 in response to an application we received to develop a formula, and Don was on that work group. Remember, we fought with it for months and to develop a formula, and we came up with what we thought was the best, about the best, the least worst formula we could find.
No one felt satisfied.
Two years later, we adopted in the rule. We went through the same process, and we got the same comments, and it was... You know, we went back in the rule. The commissioners in the agenda said, okay, we're going to hold the rule for a while. You've got 6 weeks, 8 weeks. Tell us what's a better example. We got nothing.
I can relate.
So we keep, you know, we're at that same spot over and over. I think everybody agrees it's not the best formula. But every time we look at a different one, we come up with reasons why those don't work at all. And this comes back to being probably the fairest way to do it.
Or maybe it's, while it might be the best formula we've derived, it's maybe not a good formula, right? I mean,
when I talk about fundamentally looking at the program, is we are, I don't want to say we're set in our ways, but we are. We've been doing this for years, and we're doing it based on what the original work group interpreted this statute to mean. And maybe 18 years later, maybe there is a different interpretation. Maybe there is a different way. I mean, we started this program from scratch. Nobody else was doing it. And we formed an internal and an external work group, and we had to come up with this thing from nothing, and we built it up from the ground up. Maybe it's time to go back and look at the fundamentals and say, you know, maybe you didn't build it the right way. Maybe there's a better way. And when I talked about looking at it from the alternative of the Tier 3 to the Tier 2 to Tier 1, I'm using today's terminology. Maybe you scrap tiers entirely. Maybe it's one application fee. But the application says you start by looking at this and checking off this box saying, we ran this calculation. There's no value. You know, and then it's 100% or not. Maybe you drop the Tier 1 table. Maybe it becomes an advisory table saying, yes, we've looked at this equipment before, and if you're meeting our criteria, it's 100%, and you just tell us that in the application. But there's not a table in the rule that says you specifically get 100% for this. Maybe we charge everybody $500 an application, and it doesn't matter if it's a partial or 100% or how you do it. I mean, there's other methods to do this that might get around dealing with this cost analysis procedure and determine a better value.
The more I hear you talk about this, and I'm okay if you don't feel like you can answer, but has TCEQ had kind of a think tank type thing about this and what the ideal process would be other than what where we are?
No, okay. Never. In 18 years, we have not gone back and fundamentally looked at it and discussed it. This is, it's me speaking from the standpoint of having had a meeting with Mike and Paul and talking about some cap issues and in that meeting saying, well, maybe that's the problem. Maybe it's a fundamental idea. Maybe this work group should spend the next 18 months looking at the program from the ground up. Rather than focusing on the cap that we know doesn't work, maybe we should focus on the program and say, well, this is a better way to do the work. This provides a fair way to do it. And I think that's part of what you're charged with is telling us how to implement the program.
Right. And I will say, by the way, and everybody knows that I represent Texoga on this committee, but all of my industry contacts, I don't know of anyone that is looking to expand the program to the extent of taking advantage unnecessarily. I don't think that's what we're about. But we try to go back to the roots of it or to the focus of it. That's why we keep going back to 1131 of what's the program intended to do.
Right.
And I'll just leave it at that. So. All right.
Okay.
We don't.
I asked you before about the coal plant example. And that's sort of an extreme because you're talking about a whole production process. But there must be other Tier 3 applications that aren't about a marketable product. They're just about creating a more efficient production process that also has pollution control benefits. Do you see those or not?
I don't believe we've ever seen a Tier 3 that was, well, we saw some energy efficiency applications a few years back where they switched to green lighting or added additional insulation to their building, which reduced their utility cost. But those are excluded because of the issue of not having an environmental regulation. The fact that you're reducing the amount of power that somebody down the road's creating isn't really
a
trade-off benefit.
The low NOx burners. I'm just trying to think of other examples like that.
Well,
the upcoming EPA requirement to do sort of green completions or do vapor recovery for the oil
flare
and gas
recovery.
Yeah,
we just had one of the refineries that I appraised that they did a flare gas recovery, and they had used two marketable products. They got the gas, which they brought back and burned in their boilers, and the other was what they called slop oil, and they applied a price to both of those and ran the Tier 3 equation, and I couldn't find anything wrong that they did, and they got 81 point something percent.
Okay, so they do have a
yeah, there is a product. And now if we had been doing under the statute 2 years ago where we defined byproducts, neither one of those would ever fall in the byproduct calculation because the fuel gas was a fuel gas that would have been a product that they would have sold if they hadn't burned it themselves. and the slop oil is something that they could have sold to somebody else. And they wouldn't have met that byproduct. And at that time, they would have been a 100% application rather than a partial.
But they reused the slop oil through the refinery.
Right. So.
Okay, thanks, Ron.
Thank you.
We've had a pretty healthy discussion on this. I do encourage everyone to dust off the old formulas or start with your new formula, whatever your ideas are. And we'll keep this on the next agenda because we, like we said, we realize it's a problem. I don't know if we can come up with a solution in the end, but I think it's worth staying on the agenda probably for the next meeting also. Do we have any comments from the audience? Okay. Anything else on item three? Any of these items, item three? Okay. Any old business or new business? Okay, I think we're getting down to the end then. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Also move.
All right, it's been moved. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. We are adjourned at 11:32. Thank you.
Are you opposed to adjourn?
No.
Yeah.